You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican, and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Today, we're going to hear from the candidates for Santa Fe City Council from Districts 2 and 4. In Districts 1 and 3, Councilors Rene Villarreal and Chris Rivera are running uncontested, as is Municipal Judge Virginia Vigil. Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th, and a reminder that Santa Fe uses ranked choice voting. This means that if there are three or more candidates, you have the choice to rank them in order of your preference, if you want, or you can just choose one. That's up to you. Okay, let's hear now from the candidates. I'm very happy now to welcome Alicia Abbott. She's running for City Council in District 2. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, it takes a lot to run for public office. What is your passion? What is your motivation for running?
I have been a happy citizen of Santa Fe for a little over 20 years. I am a preservation professional, an archaeologist by training, and also I'm a business owner. I have a small archaeological consulting firm in Santa Fe. I have been a preservation planner for the city and the state, feds, county. That's my passion. And one of the things that I've noticed as a citizen of Santa Fe is over, I think, the last 20 years or so, there's been a bit of a deterioration in the attitudes about the importance of cultural preservation, historic preservation in Santa Fe. And I think it immediately and directly impacts mostly people who are ordinary Santa Feans, people who live here, people who are happy to be Santa Fe residents, who love to live here, love their neighbors, love their neighborhoods. So I see an opportunity to be a voice on City Council for preservation, long-range planning, neighbors and neighborhoods, preserving the quality of life in Santa Fe for the people who live here, as well as making it possible for people to move to Santa Fe and develop for us to develop as a city. It's a balancing act, and I think that it's something that, if you come at it from a preservation perspective, is a very useful way to be.
Talk more about neighbors and neighborhoods.
When I first moved to Santa Fe, and my husband and I were able to purchase a house in the South Capitol neighborhood. It wasn't called South Capitol then. South Capitol sort of become, it's moving further south, I've noticed, but a little post-war neighborhood near the Rose Park and Salvador Perez Park. Very modest neighborhood, originally a World War II neighborhood. It was one that was built to house people who were coming back from the war, families mostly, and people who were coming back from World War II. It was an early affordable housing development in Santa Fe during a time when we could build sort of on a large scale affordable housing for the population of people who were low income or medium income who needed housing in Santa Fe. When we first moved into the neighborhood, all of our neighbors were older, all the people who were living around us, mostly older women who were widowed. And we have since that time lost all of those neighbors. They have passed on. We've watched the neighborhood change. But one thing that hasn't changed is people who have moved in are very dedicated to the neighborhood and to their neighbors. And it's been a wonderful experience. And I think that experience is repeated over and over in Santa Fe's neighborhoods. People are concerned and engaged with their neighbors and the things that are happening to their neighbors. And I think they're worried. People are worried about their neighborhoods deteriorating. They're worried about losing their neighbors because Santa Fe is becoming much more expensive, obviously, to live in. And I worry particularly about my elderly neighbors now, people who were not so in 20 years ago, but who are now entering that category, who are often finding themselves in a position where they may be losing their homes, particularly the older renters. I worry about the older renters in my neighborhood. We look after each other. The city is not going to take care of us. I mean, we don't, not that the city doesn't care as an entity, but in general, it's neighbors and neighborhoods. It's the people you live with, the people you interact with every day. They're the people who are looking out for you and that you are looking out for. It's what makes Santa Fe a special, wonderful place.
I can see, I mean, and you know, many of us live in neighborhoods where we know our neighbors and we've gotten to know our neighbors over time. Taking care of each other informally is one thing. From the perspective of the city being on the city council, how do you see the city taking an active role in cultivating neighborhoods and the voice of neighborhoods with respect to decisions made in the city?
Yes, good question. I have seen what I think is a movement in the city council, the governing policy recently, that seems to be sidelining the individual voices of residents in Santa Fe, if their concerns are very neighborhood specific. We tend to want to think about the broader good, all of Santa Fe, which is very important, thinking about all of Santa Fe residents, and that's an important consideration for anyone running for city council. You're not just representing your neighbors and your neighborhoods, you're representing the entire city. But as a focus for neighbors and neighborhoods, particularly in District 2, which is an enormous district, we go from Canyon Road all the way to the interstate, we go from Hopewell Man in the west all the way to Wilderness Gate. It's an amazing diversity of people. And one of the things that I think that has been happening lately is we've sort of been distilling the diversity of our neighborhoods down to rich versus poor, us versus them, old versus young, people, the haves and the have-nots. I think as a city councilor, what you want to do is be a representative of all of those voices. And they're representative of every single individual in Santa Fe. It's not a good idea, I think, to really group people into easy categories. And I fear that we've really been doing that lately in terms of our policy, talking about, we need to, when we talk about the need to increase affordable housing, we need to increase available housing. We can't pit a group of people who need housing, for example, against people who have property in Santa Fe or are homeowners in Santa Fe.
And you see that? I do.
I fear that many of the policies lately that have been coming out of City Hall, we've been designed to sort of decrease the individual voice of the individual homeowner, and in some cases even to trivialize and negate the concerns of individual homeowners, sometimes by saying, for example, that that people who live in established neighborhoods are not interested in progress, or they're not interested in development, or they're not interested in having people who are home insecure move into their neighborhoods. That is not what I hear from my neighbors. It is not what I hear from people who are my potential constituents in District 2. I hear people are very interested and are very concerned about homelessness, very concerned about people who are food insecure and housing insecure, people who are living on a starvation wage. All of those things are a concern for the people that I have been talking to in my neighborhoods. They're not trying to keep people out. They're not trying to create a 1950s world where we are all the same. But I think that diversity of voices is sort of being sidelined with policies that sort of treat us as a monolithic block of East Side.
How do you see addressing that?
I think that one of the things that we need to do is be concerned anytime a policy is implemented that is designed to, for example, force rather than encourage the diversity housing in our neighborhoods, for example. I was concerned about the accessory dwelling unit ordinance passed recently, not because I'm concerned about I'm trying to stop development, but because I think it was not good planning. We can't discard the concerns of neighborhoods with regard to things like parking and access and water and services by simply saying, well, we need to increase our density because it's, quote, the right thing to do. And while we might say, yeah, it is, it's a good, it's not a bad thing to be concerned about these issues, we can't say, well, if you're on the other side of the issue, it's the wrong opinion or it's the wrong thing to do, because I think that sidelines one of the biggest assets we have in Santa Fe and District 2 particularly, which is the individual long-term and even short-term dedicated homeowners and renters who are concerned about the issues both narrow and broad in Santa Fe.
We've got just a little over a minute left. What do you think about the whole issue of short-term rentals gobbling up, a lot of the housing that could otherwise be long-term rentals?
In my neighborhood, we see short-term rentals proliferating. I don't think that they are bad in and of themselves. What I hear from people that I have been talking to, particularly people who are short-term rent. They have short-term rental property and they're renting it. In my neighborhood, there are many of them who are doing it the correct way. They're getting their permits. They're paying the right dues. They're informing neighbors. They're being considerate of neighbors' issues. What they're telling me is they're being undercut drastically by people who are not on the books. They're not following the rules. They're not paying their dues. And I'm concerned, very concerned, that that it will really only increase the speculation. Real estate speculation. Well, many of the people I've spoken to, not wealthy people, but people who own homes in Santa Fe are worried about being able to stay there. They sort of feel like they're being stalked for their real estate, that their only value is their real estate for someone who can then turn it around and rent it for four times what you could rent it for long term.
Alicia Abbott is running for City Council in District 2. Thank you so much for being with us.
It is my pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.
The Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation is once again accepting scholarship applications, and Northern New Mexico residents are invited to apply. Deadline for undergraduate scholarships is the 21st of January, 2020. Deadline for Career Pathways Scholarships in support of two-year degrees, certificates, and trades is November 17th, 2019. Criteria and application for both may be found at lanlfoundation.org/scholarships. I'd like now to welcome Michael J. Garcia. He is running for City Council in District 2. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So what motivated you to run for office?
Well, I've had a lingering feeling that City Council, and in particular city government, has not necessarily represented the focus of my generation.
How would you describe your generation?
So I'm 40 years old. Definitely not the typical demographic of the major population of Santa Fe, which is a little bit on the older side, with a lot of retirees in the Santa Fe community. And so that tends to kind of be the focus of government and ensuring that populace is, their needs are met. And so I felt like my generation's needs weren't necessarily being heard and addressed.
What are some of those needs?
So I wanted to ensure that I have two daughters, and a lot of our needs focus around ensuring that we can live a healthy, prosperous life here in Santa Fe. As you can see with the housing crisis, that's really putting an impact on a lot of families here in Santa Fe, and in particular younger folks who usually rent. Rent has gone up over 40%. The past 5 years. And so somebody who might have been renting an apartment for $1,000 is now paying well over $1,400. And in some cases, more than that. The demand is way outreaching the supply. So, in some cases, landlords are able to get what they want for their space. And in the past, landlords might have had to spend a week, a month trying to rent out their space. I mean, they're renting out spaces in a day or two. And folks will sometimes be competitive and offer a landlord a year's rent in advance, or even offer higher than what they're asking if they just offer them that space without having to go through a competitive process.
So the high prices are, the market, and the market is limited by various factors. How would you address that?
Well, we've got to definitely have more of a supply, and we've got to look at how we address the supply and the demand need. I know that it's been impacted by the Airbnb business. A lot of the rental market has been kind of incorporated into Airbnb business. So that in turn has made the market for rentals shrink. So we've got to look at how we can grow that pool of whether it's rentals or available homes for purchase. I mean, even the housing market is highly competitive in the sense folks are selling houses quickly. I notice in my neighborhood that when a house goes up for sale, it will sell within a week or two, if that. And I was talking with one of my new neighbors down the street who just purchased property. talking to her about, hey, I noticed the sign went up and it went down right away. And she had told me that she purchased it the first day that it went on the market. To me, that's surprisingly shocking. Usually homes stay on the market for a month to, dependent on the price range. But one day, that really opened up my eyes in regards to how much demand there is for housing in Santa Fe. So we've got to look at it to not only address opening up the pool of housing available for renters, but also for folks being able to purchase homes. And so we've got to be able to look at it across all spectrums. We've got to make sure that there's a pool of availability for not only at what I would call your entry level, maybe your studio apartments or your kind of casita condos, but maybe all the way up to family dwelling homes where it's 3-4 bedroom houses. And we want to ensure that as we grow and as we build, we're doing so in a smart and sustainable manner.
Do you have any specific sort of policy ideas on how to make that happen?
Well, we definitely got to look at how our current housing codes are prohibiting housing development. There's a hot topic right now of developers want to build, but there are current policies and codes on the books that are prohibiting that and delaying growth and delaying building. So as a counselor, I would be somebody that wants to go and work hand in hand with those home builders to figure out how we can work together and get us out of this housing crisis. I want to ensure that we're not overdeveloping by any sense, because we've got to take into consideration factors like our natural resources and our water, and that we're not overgrowing and overusing. And in some senses, if we have a lot of development and then in 15, 20, 30 years, we're in a water crisis,
right,
not necessarily a housing crisis. So that's where we want to ensure that as we are looking to address our housing crisis needs, we're not going to be putting ourselves in a bad space in 10, 15, 20, 30 years, whatever it may be. My perspective and my vision is to, as a counselor, is to grow city government and have an efficient city government, but with a long-term vision, a long-term sustainable vision. I want to ensure that we're addressing our needs now, but we're also planning for decades to come. And
which is kind of a balancing act, right?
It is.
I mean, on the one hand, you want to grow. On the one other, you don't want to grow too much. You've got demand, but you've also got water limitations.
Right. And so we've just got to have that kind of balancing act and ensure that we don't tip to one side more than the other. And I think that's where working with the community, working within our government, and working with the stakeholders to ensure that we are properly planning and investing for our future. Because, like I said, I want to ensure that we're not leaving future generations for a crisis that's going to be on their doorstep.
What do you see as the role of neighborhoods, existing neighborhoods, as voicing their needs and wants in this growing city?
Oh, I see it a big component, and that's a big driver for why I'm in this race. So I have a background of working in communities. I've worked in communities for the last 14 years.
What, doing what?
So I started off as an AmeriCorps Vista member. And my role in that capacity was to work with rural communities in regards to addressing why there are poverty issues in that particular community. What are the barriers and keeping people in poverty? And so what I did was I traveled across the state, held community meetings with not only all the stakeholders, but with organizations as well to determine what were the factors, what were the community's proposals, and how we can break down those barriers and hopefully break that cycle of poverty for that particular area. So that was my kind of entree into community work and community development work. And so with that, I've been, like I said, for the last 14 years, been doing in national service work. I first was an AmeriCorps Vista member. Then I managed an AmeriCorps Vista project that was statewide. I placed sometimes upwards of 70 members across the state of New Mexico working in communities where they had poverty needs and needs that were attacking those communities, and we had community-minded solutions. And then 8 years ago, I jumped into the New Mexico State Program Director position for the federal agency that oversees AmeriCorps and Senior Corps programming, which is called the Corporation for National Community Service. So,
but back to neighborhoods.
Okay, so in regards to neighborhoods, I feel that neighborhoods are critical in addressing their needs, and we need to ensure that we're pulling that critical information from them to ensure that we're not just hearing their needs, but addressing their needs. And I think that's the component that's been missing, is more times than not, communities will have their voices heard, but not necessarily addressed. And I'm going to ensure that as a counselor, I'm addressing needs. And that requires a lot of follow-up, a lot of engagement with constituents to ensure that when they voice their concerns, their needs, that I'm following up to ensure that I'm hearing what they're saying and addressing what they're requesting. And sometimes needs can't be met, and I've got to address why needs cannot be met. What might be the prohibitors? How do we potentially think of a different avenue? How to address those needs? Communities is critical. And as I see myself as somebody that is going to be a representative of the community on the council, that's been my mantra. I'm running to not necessarily be the city councilor. I'm to be the city the community representative on the council. I want them to see that reflection of me on the council when I'm there on that dais. They know that they have somebody that has their back and is going to be having the community mind in as their first priority.
Michael J. Garcia is running for city council in District 2. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Support for the Radio Cafe comes from the Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation by Deborah Levy with Jonathan Freeman on Wednesday, October 30th at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. Deborah Levy is a fellow of the Royal Society of Literature and writes fiction, plays, and poetry. The author of beloved books including Hot Milk and Swimming Home, both Man Booker Prize finalists, and Things I Don't Want to Know, her latest novel is The Man Who Saw Everything, longlisted for the 2019 Booker Prize. Tickets available at the Lensic, 988-1234, or lensic.org. I'd like now to welcome Jamie Cassett Sanchez. She is running for City Council in District 4. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what is it that motivated you to run for City Council?
So my background is in public health. I have a master's in public health from UCLA in community health sciences. And both through my education and through the public health work that I was doing, I began to see this pattern, this really important realization came across over me that the decisions that were made by our leaders in whatever city I was working on were having a direct impact on the health and well-being of the citizens in the community.
What are some examples of that?
So for example, when I was working in a school district, a K-8 school district, this was in California, and I was primarily looking at obesity and diabetes prevention. And so when you look at obesity and diabetes prevention, you really start to talk a lot about nutrition and exercise. Those are the first two things you're going to talk about. And so as I'm talking to parents about, you know, their kids need 60 minutes of activity every single day and they need to be eating healthy food, we started to talk about things like the sidewalks weren't safe enough for them to walk on. There were no public parks close enough without public transportation. The public transportation took too long to get to the grocery stores. And there were a number of fast food restaurants and convenience stores. And so that's where the kids were primarily eating. And so all of these components, when we're looking at things like zoning, when we're looking at the availability of safe spaces to play in, when we're looking at the infrastructure, these were impacting individuals in a very noticeable way.
So when you look at Santa Fe, what are some of the public health issues that translate into public policy?
So we know in Santa Fe there are a few big issues that we're seeing, especially in my district. One of them is housing. We know housing is a big challenge here in Santa Fe. We don't have enough housing. Our stock of both rentals and homes for working families or first-time home buyers to purchase are not big enough. And this is really you know, we have to be looking at what has happened with Santa Fe real estate and development over the last, gosh, my entire life probably. when I'm looking at housing issues in Santa Fe, there's a few things we need to look at. We do need to look at where we have opportunities to develop. We do need to look at where we have opportunities to increase density, but we also need to look at these in terms of how we work with the existing neighborhoods and the fact that we really don't have a lot of neighborhood planning happening. And so there has been a lot of challenges with creating new units as our city population has grown, because we're not really working with the community to see how we can both welcome everybody here who wants to live here, as well as create a lovely community and neighborhood for everyone to be living in. One issue that we really have with our building is our codes. They are old, they're archaic, they are prone to a variety of different interpretations. One thing I'm proposing is what I'm calling code hygiene. So this would be an annual process where we would take a look at all of the variance requests, all of the questions that we've been asked, all the places where there has been challenges dealing with our codes. And this would be for building as well as for, you know, other areas of city life, including business and areas there. And we would see what in our codes need to be cleaned up so that the rules are clear, that everybody's always getting the same answer, that we're not wasting valuable city employee time trying to figure out what the answer is, and that people receive the same answer every time they ask the same question. And so that's a way that we can be working on some of that efficiency and helping with the housing issue here in Santa Fe.
How does housing relate to public health?
So housing is one of it's one of the cornerstones of public health. If you don't have a secure place to live, if you don't have enough money for food, for utilities, for transportation, because you're paying so much in rent, it is very hard to live a healthy, thriving life. Now, I think what's important is that I don't think people always understand exactly what public health is, because public health is more than just physical health and well-being. We have this conversation a lot of what does it mean to be healthy, and it's not merely the absence of disease. It's about how you can thrive as an individual. So we're looking at physical health. We're looking at mental health. We are also looking at things like environmental health, of not being exposed to pollutants all the time. We're looking at things like economic health, of making sure that you have enough money in case of an emergency or to take care of just your basic daily needs. So housing really is one of those cornerstones, because it impacts all of those pieces. If somebody's living in substandard housing, they're going to be, exposed to molds or other, you know, pollutants in the air that could cause physical health issues. If somebody is constantly living under the stress of not knowing if they have stable housing from month to month, that can impact their physical, social, emotional health. And then also when we think about our kiddos and we think about them living under those stresses with their families, that actually will really impact them throughout the lifespan. And there's a lot of research that supports that.
What is your feeling about short-term rental? That's a big part of the conversation where housing is concerned.
Yeah, you know, and it is such an interesting conversation, because there's not a clear-cut answer. We know that tourism is one of the primary drivers, one of our primary economic drivers here in Santa Fe. And so we don't, you know, and that means that it's jobs for Santa Feans. So it's not just that we, you know, like tourists because it brings the city money. There are people that are working in the tourism industry that's their living. But we also need to make sure that we are addressing the short-term rentals in a way that's still supporting our city. So first of all, we need to make sure that anybody who's running a short-term rental has the proper license to do so. And we're getting those gross receipts taxes, because we need that money to be coming back into the city. And that was a really big issue. We also need to be looking at the number of short-term rentals that we feel is appropriate for the city. And I know that the city is currently doing some more research into short-term rentals, and I will be very eager to see what they have found out about the short-term rentals here. And then from there, I think that we need to make some big decisions about how we can both support, you know, individuals who are using short-term rentals as a means of actually paying for their life in here in Santa Fe. You know, this is their income, but also making sure that it is not taking too much away from the rental stock. We know that it is a factor, but there are also factors there. And I think short-term rentals gets a lot of attention, but we need to pay attention to other things, such as the number of people that own vacation homes and investment properties who are not living here in New Mexico. And the fact that individuals that can afford those types of properties, that also drives what the cost of real estate is, as opposed to just the wages here in Santa Fe. And so those are other things that we need to be looking at.
What are your feelings about water and conserving water, making sure there's an adequate water supply for our residents and visitors?
Yes, and we know that Santa Fe is a dry, arid area, and water is one of our limiting factors. What I will say is I'm encouraged by the fact that Santa Fe is one of the leaders in water conservation. And I think that we really need to lean into some of the new technologies that are being developed to really assist with water conservation. Education is always important. We do need to be talking to our citizens about their use of water, how we can decrease water use on the individual level. And we also need to be looking at, you know, as we develop, how do we develop in a smart way? How do we build smart housing that is going to help with water conservation? And there's a lot of options out there. There's a lot of technology out there. And I think we really need to be taking advantage of that instead of trying to play catch up later.
We've got just about a minute left. Mm-hmm. What's another issue that you're really passionate about?
You know, homelessness is another really big issue that we see in our community. And individuals are homeless for a variety of reasons. And so I think that it's really important that when we're addressing homelessness, we take an individualized approach. One of my key policy proposals is I'd like to create what I'm calling the Health Alliance Committee. This would be a collaboration between the county, the city, and the school district to be looking at some of these really big complex issues to make sure that we are utilizing our resources wisely. We're not unnecessarily replicating services, and we are bringing together all the actors around a specific issue to make sure that efforts are coordinated, evidence-based, and will actually really make a difference for the city.
Jamie Cassett Sanchez is running for City Council in District 4. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Funding learning initiatives and community programs, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanham Foundation for support of the Radio Cafe. I'm very happy now to welcome Javier Anderson. He's running for City Council in District 4. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
So what motivated you to run for city council?
You know, I was telling one of the papers that I don't remember if it was the pothole issue or the weeds issue, but I was complaining about one of those issues or an infrastructure issue to my wife. And she was very polite and told me I could do something about it or I could be quiet. And you know, that was one of the big motivations to run. You know, I went through that whole process of evaluating myself and how, you know, what we would want to do, and had that conversation with my employer, who's Los Alamos Fire Department. And like I said, I wanted to make sure that it wouldn't interfere with my job up here. And I was very surprised at the reaction. They said, "We're actually very encouraging of you running, and we'd like to see leadership and people take those leadership type roles." So it was it almost organically happened, and just one of those really fun, interesting pieces for us to get on the ballot, and if nothing else, have the conversation with our constituents to see how we can make the community better.
So there are things like potholes and kind of the maintenance things and drainage and roads and so on. That's one issue. What do you think some of the other major issues are that you want to work on?
So I'll give you our agenda pretty quickly here, and it's public safety. And I tell everybody we want to make sure that our public safety positions are filled, make sure that our houses are safe, make sure that our communities are safe. The second piece to that is equity. And I talk about equity in a bunch of different fashions. And you talked about infrastructure. That's one piece of equity and making sure that services are equitable citywide. The second piece to that is making sure that we have equitable housing. And that's a big piece of everybody's agenda. You know, we're really talking about an inventory problem that has been systemic for, you know, a couple of years where we didn't do building and now we're trying to catch up. And that shortage of inventory has really priced a lot of people out of being able to live in Santa Fe. So really actively engaging, seeing what we can do with planning and zoning and that department and encourage building in a responsible way with neighborhood engagement and make it affordable as we can for our constituents here in the city of Santa Fe so that people don't get priced out of their homes, whether it be whether they're trying to rent or they're trying to buy. And I tell everybody, you know, we can't just have the rental conversation. We need to have the home ownership conversation because that's the biggest piece to, you know, somebody's equity and their the biggest piece of property, the biggest purchase they'll make in their life.
What do you think are the policy initiatives that could really effectively address the rental and homeowner shortage?
And I apologize if I can get a go back to the previous question, and I didn't finish it. The last piece on our agenda is looking at environmental pieces, watershed. I worked for a time at State Forestry, so watershed is near and dear to my heart, and making sure that we're taking care of our responsibilities and protecting our water sources. To get back to your question, what sort of policies? I think the Casita Law was a great step forward to providing some immediate inventory. In addition to that, we really need to look at infill opportunities that tag in with our public transit system. We need to look at our public transit system, the timing and the frequency to make sure that folks are able to get and use it effectively, get to where they're going and use it effectively. That last mile, Chain Breakers does an awesome program where they're doing bicycles for public service and earning that bike to kind of close that loop with the last mile that public transportation doesn't necessarily always solve. So again, it's multiple pieces, making sure that we're encouraging building in a responsible manner, looking at infill opportunities with different types of occupancies where infrastructure's already there and we can sustain that growth without affecting neighborhoods. You know, that's probably one of the biggest things that you hear in most of the neighborhoods is, especially in District 4, is they want to build a great example is over on Rodeo Road, the new apartments there. When I was canvassing in Via Caballero, they really were concerned about the traffic that's going to produce and how the infrastructure in that area is going to be totally affected with just traffic. And the fact that Galisteo may be unusable after that for them to turn left or turn right just because of the increased amount of traffic once those apartments get filled.
And that's a problem everywhere in the city. In all different districts, it shows up in different ways, but we have an old city that wasn't planned. I mean, Santa Fe existed long before the word city planning even came into being. And so these are problems that don't necessarily have easy solutions.
They don't. And, you know, I think we need to do a better job when we do a lot of these increases in infrastructure. A good example is Sirius Road and making sure that just one of the examples there is, you know, the need for broadband. So when you're talking about multiple issues and multiple layer issues and city planning, Sirius Road, when we got the new drainage and stuff put in, we did a great job at trying to get that done in a efficient manner, not trying to affect business. And that was a DOT project, so it was a state project. But the coordination there of getting broadband conduit, not the broadband itself, but just the conduit underneath the road so that we wouldn't have to tear up Cerritos Road when we do need the broadband, didn't get put in.
Yeah.
And those type of coordination issues really need to be brought to the forefront when they present themselves so that we can, as a community, just be that little bit of leaning forward so that we're not tearing up Cerritos Road again, which inconveniences businesses. And, you know, it's one of the longest stretches of commercial business that we have in the city. And every time that we tear it up, it really affects those businesses. And not just the businesses, I mean, the community as well, trying to get out on Cerritos Road or cross it or, you know, even the pedestrian traffic.
You talked a moment ago about the watershed. Talk about the issues. Well, there's two things. One is what citizens should really be thinking about in protecting the watershed so we have a clean and safe ongoing water supply, and also balancing water supply against growth on the one hand and yet acknowledging that we are growing on the other.
So I tell everybody responsible growth. BDD bought us several years, and that's the Buckman Diverse and Direct Project. And that's over on the west side. And then on the east side of the city, we have our watershed. And I tell everybody thinning and making sure that we're introducing those aspects of our ecosystem and getting it back to that balanced piece. I tell everybody, we did a really interesting project when I was with State Forestry. We were awarded some capital dollars, and it was called the Two Goats Project. We were able to put state money on federal land and do a large thinning project on the top, which was Forest Service land. Below that Forest Service land, we had private ownership land, and then we had City of Alamogordo land. And I was able to put federal dollars on both of the two adjoining landowners, which created a much larger landscape effect. We had the City of Alamogordo own this piece of property in the mountains because it was a water collection point. And I tell everybody, we had rain and snow totals that were dwindling, and you could see them every year. They were getting lower and lower, and the water collection kind of followed suit. And it was this dramatic increase. Once we did the thinning project, water collection went up because we had more water actually physically hitting the ground.
Very interesting.
The last piece of that is every citizen should worry about it, protecting that watershed and water for the future, making sure that we're responsible, but that requires some investment as well.
Javier Anderson is candidate for City Council in District 4. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on and encouraging everybody to go out and vote. Thank you so much.
The Radio Cafe also reached out to candidate Greg Scargall from District 4, but we were not able to schedule a conversation. So that's our show. Once again, Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th, and you can also do early voting through November 2nd. On the ballot, besides the candidates for City Council, are also Santa Fe Community College board members, so check out that race and make your vote. Very important to vote. Thanks for listening. And the Radio Cafe would like to thank its sponsors, the Santa Fe Institute, the Lannan Foundation, the Lannell Foundation, the Lenzic Performing Arts Center, and Southwest Care Center. Thank you all so much for making this show possible. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.